This is Tom Fox, and I'd like to welcome you to Innovation in Compliance. In this podcast series, I will bring you interviews with some of the leading experts who are changing the way practitioners approach compliance. Although the name compliance is in the title, it's really about innovation. And I wanted to drive the conversation about innovation in compliance into the 2030s and beyond, with a focus on innovations for the compliance practitioner and the compliance professional. You want to learn how to bring your business into an innovative state and more innovative business solutions for compliance problems, issues, and concerns. This is the podcast for you. Innovation in Compliance is a production of Compliance Podcast Network. Today I visit with Sue Bingham. Sue is a HR and leadership expert, and she talks about the role of leadership in transforming your culture. It's an episode that I enjoyed greatly, and I know you well as well. First, a message from the sponsor of the Compliance Podcast Network this month, Ethico.
In the intricate world of ethics and compliance, each second is precious, and slow case closures are more than just delays, they're missed opportunities. Enter Ethico. Our solution revolutionizes case management, cutting closure times in half and turning every challenge into a chance for improvement. Imagine a workspace where efficiency and compliance coexist harmoniously. Don't just dream of faster resolutions, make it your reality. Visit ethico.com/CPN today to book a demo and dive into our exclusive white paper by Tom Fox, The ROI of Compliance, and to try our free ROI calculator. Empower your team with the tools they deserve.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox back for another episode, and I'm absolutely thrilled today to have with me Sue Bingham. Sue, first of all, welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for taking the time to visit with me today.
Thank you. I'm happy to.
Sue, could you tell us a little bit about your professional background and what you're up to these days?
My background goes way back, and I started off working in aerospace and pharmaceutical companies, big companies, in human resources. Didn't like the role that human resources played in a very traditional environment, even one as professional as the pharmaceutical company. And so while I was at the aerospace company, I met someone who had a totally different view of how we should treat and manage people. And I was the corporate training director at that time and had an opportunity to do all the leadership training and all the new plants that we were opening with this new philosophy and approach. And that became something I wanted to spend my life doing. So I started my own business after I'd left there, and I have a small consulting company where we work with, I would call them courageous leaders, who are willing to risk doing some things very differently in terms of leadership.
Tell us about HPWP.
It stands for High Performance Workplace. And before you say anything, I know workplace is one word, but we wanted to distinguish it. And HPW is a common sense, just common sense approach to the way we treat people. It's not rocket science, but unfortunately, it doesn't exist in many traditionally led companies. It's a focus on trust. It's a focus on recognizing that people that work with us are adults. It's not having a two-class citizenship between management and employees. It's very transparent. We eliminate things that look like two-class citizenship. And trust is huge, and we believe that management leadership has to demonstrate trust in order to be able to ask for it.
Wow. You really laid out so many things there. Who is your primary customer base? Is it leaders? Is it businesses? Is it a combination, or is it something else?
I'd say it's a combination, but we really focus on the leader. We've had the opportunity to work with a few companies where we could tell that the leader was checking a box versus really passionate about the workforce and the culture. And we just saw no need to work with those. So I'd say it's mostly the leader. We've worked with some really big companies, and we work with a lot of medium and small companies. And we've been doing it for 25 years now.
So what's the difference between leadership development and organizational development?
In my career, I really practice both. The difference for me is focusing on the individual versus on the structure and the processes as a whole, which would be organizational development. All the systems and so on that go into supporting the culture would be organizational development, but leadership development is truly individual. I guess that's my best answer.
You've laid out many of the characteristics, I think, of a leadership mindset, but let me just ask that question and have you lay them out so our listeners have that in one answer. So what is leadership mindset in your opinion, Sue?
Oh, that's easy for me to answer because that's what we do in our training. We believe that we need to change the hearts and the minds if we want people to change their behaviors. So for us, it's having positive assumptions about people. So often we have negative assumptions and positive assumptions about people. That mindset causes people to be trusting, causes people to trust. So I would say that the mindset is one that values people as adults and that has positive assumptions more often than not. Sometimes we're wrong. Sometimes somebody is a bad apple and we didn't see it, but we'd rather err on the side of positive assumptions than negative assumptions.
So you are co-author of a book, Creating a High Performance Workplace. Can I start by asking, why did you want to write this book?
My mentor, who taught me everything I knew about this philosophy, left the company at the same time that I did. And while we'd had a mentor relationship, as we went into consulting, it progressed and we got married. And so we've been married 23 years. And he's really the creator of this approach and its applications. And I wanted to honor him. I wanted it to be a legacy to him. He's been retired for 8 years now, but I wanted people to know what he'd done and I wanted to get the word out.
Who's the primary audience? Is it business leaders? Is it employees? Is it compliance officers? Is it all of the above? None of the above?
No, it's business leaders, and I'd love to talk to compliance officers. It's absolutely business leaders because the employees are the beneficiary of good leadership.
We're going to take a deep dive into compliance in a minute, and that's really why I was so excited to visit with you. But is the book a summary or an encapsulation, rather, of the WP training? Is it something different? How would you describe that?
There are 8 elements to the high performance workplace approach, and each chapter is pretty much that. The basic philosophy is that if we accept that 95% of people or so are genuinely good people at heart, not that we don't make mistakes or aren't perfect, but that are generally good people and 5% are really bad, we want to focus more on the 95% than the 5%. So the book is geared to take these 8 elements and talk about how do we extend this to the 95%, pay attention to the people that are coming to work and doing a great job every day. And many of them may not be performing at their best right now. In fact, I don't think most are. I think our companies have sort of encouraged average performance. We talk about performance in terms of minimums. In a workshop, I'll ask leaders, how many of you have people that are just barely meeting the minimum? And almost everybody will have someone. And I'll say, just raise the minimum. And that's not hard to do. It's pretty simple. In fact, most of what we do is pretty simple and easy to do. So I forgot where you took me. I get real excited about the 8 elements. So it's talking about the 8 elements. And these are elements that are common sense. Everybody would agree with, nothing new. What's different is that it's easy to say the words, but how do you act them? But it's the same thing with mission statements and so on. It's a lot of nice words on the wall, but really, how do people behave in accordance with those values and with that mission?
Could you go through the 8 elements?
Sure. The first one's positive assumptions about people. Like I said, that's sort of the groundwork. The second is mutual trust and respect. among others. The third is eliminating negatives. And by negatives, what we're talking about are those things that make a certain group of people feel less valued. So there's all kinds of different benefits for different classes of employees, different policies and practices. So anything that makes somebody feel less valued, we want to eliminate. Many of those are really easy to eliminate. The fourth one is training. Obviously, people need to be competent and skilled. And training is one of the ones that when we do surveys, most often is the lowest rated, which is surprising to me, but training is one. Creating commitment. Used to be employee involvement and empowerment, but those have, in my view, become too much like programs and just checking the box and surveys and so on. So what we're really about is creating commitment if we want to see those desired outcomes. The fifth is, did I say four or five? I will tell you, primary, they're all important, but high expectations is a key one. And there are a lot of things that go into how do we create high expectations and hold people to those. Another one is adult-to-adult communication. Too much of our communication in traditional work environments is parent-child, so it's adult-to-adult. And did I cover them? I wasn't counting. Were you counting, Tom?
I think we got to seven.
Oh, we got to seven. Oh, shoot. Let me think about it. I'll come back to you.
All right. Let's move to the intersection of compliance and employment, because many of the listeners to this podcast are compliance professionals or chief compliance officers. So I really was intrigued to visit with you on how you see that intersection. So where do you see as compliance is related to employment in the workplace?
I think compliance is critical. I think we need compliance officers. I think that the difference between, for me, and you're an expert on this, but the difference for me is that compliance is something that we don't have the luxury of trying to get people to commit to doing on their own. It's a law. It's something we have to do. It's something we have to monitor. It's something we have to track, and it's very necessary. Commitment is different for me in terms of it takes more to get people's commitment, but you can't, for instance, speeding. I'm sure, Tom, you never drive over the speed limit. I mean, never. And maybe that's true, and maybe you're committed to it, but I'm not committed to that. And we have enforcement to assure that our laws are followed. So I'm very much for commitment where I've run into, or compliance, where I've run into trouble with compliance is with employee relations policies that aren't law, that are simply a determination that the management has made or the senior management has made or somebody's made, that this is the way we're going to treat people. And holding people to those accountable. My best example is that most attorneys have caused companies to publish employee handbooks with lots and lots of rules and a disciplinary procedure if those rules aren't followed. And it's a progressive one, so it gets progressively worse. And my arguments with that, because it's not necessary. It's not required. Certainly discrimination and those kinds of things are, but general human behavior and how we treat people does not need to look like a post of children's rules at a pool.
And that's one of the complaints, critiques, comments about compliance, that it's the land of no populated by Dr. No. So how would you say, which you might charitably call a minus of compliance, how can we move that mindset to a plus of compliance, or really make it so that employees, if not embrace it, will at least understand the communications and training behind it?
I think a plus of compliance is that where true compliance is necessary, it's to benefit everyone. And I think you can explain it that way. We're going to comply with the fact that we're not going to discriminate in hiring. And I think that the plus is that at this stage, we still have to do that. We still need to do that. We need to make sure we're being fair. We need to legislate it. Now, many companies do it not because it's a policy, not because they need to be compliant. They just do it because it's the right thing to do. They don't even think about it. I remember the CEO of a very large company said to me, "Oh, I just won an award for my diversity in all my hiring." And he goes, "That's hilarious. They asked me what I did." And he said, I just hired the best people." So I think it's a difference. I think it's helping people understand that there are some things that have evolved that we want to get back to being on track. And that compliance is a way to do it until we get to a level of commitment. And some things we may never get to a level of commitment, but that's okay. Compliance is still necessary. Otherwise, we've got the Wild West.
So that really brings me directly to the next topic I wanted to explore to you, which is commitment. And what's the value of commitment?
Commitment is that people will do what they say they're going to do. It's the heart of accountability. And I was listening to your person the other day about accountability, and he clearly has a wide background in that. And I liked a number of his definitions. And accountability, I believe, is that you can't make somebody be accountable. It's sort of like the difference between compliance and commitment. You can't make someone do something. You can threaten, you can coerce, you can do all those kinds of things, but accountability happens when people are doing what they said they were going to do, when they're doing what they want to do, when they're doing what they believe is the right thing to do. That's sort of commitment to me.
What's the intersection of compliance, commitment, and culture?
Culture is made up of both, at least in a business culture, in any culture. It's made up of both. It's made up of those things that are best for everyone, but you can't get a whole group of people to commit to it, to either they don't think it's that important or whatever. So compliance is important. We need to have that to be reliable. Commitment is in a culture is where you get high performance. Commitment is where people are passionate about what they're doing. They're committed to it. They're committed to the company. And compliance is going along. Compliance is, I understand that this is something that I need to do. Commitment is, I want to do this.
You were attending a webinar that we did yesterday that we really tried to tie a lot of these concepts together. And even the regulators in the compliance world now recognize that culture is the bottom line, and they are going to start to assess corporate culture if a company finds itself in trouble. When the regulators finally figure it out, I think it's time the rest of us did too.
So I think that is awesome, because one of the things that always bothered me about the employment policies that lawyers did to mitigate risk is, yeah, their job is to mitigate risk as much as possible. But they're not there. They don't see what it does to the culture. They don't see what it does to the 95% of the people. They don't see what happens when you're creating an environment of trust, but you're treating people like kids. That's the kind of thing that I've been against.
A friend of mine many years ago worked for Exxon, and he's asking what it was like. This was in the 80s, and he said, "It's like being in the third grade." So they want you at your desk with your suit and tie on. Yeah, maybe it's loosened up. I wanted to end, Sue, by asking, where do you see the intersection of compliance and employment down the road as we evolve? And let me throw in the other factor that I love to consider with a 5-generational workforce.
I'm not an expert in that, Tom. I think you probably are better answering that. The only thing I would say is that while generations are different and have different expectations, and we can see with all the protests and so on, younger generations are more apt to rail against something they see as being required. I still think that people are people, and that when you treat people with value and respect, it doesn't matter what age they are. We've got several younger people in the family and they're starting their first jobs. And they want to be valued. They want to be talked to. They want to be communicated to. But they don't want lots of rules. So I think the intersection is, as we go down the road, is compliance will be really important for legal requirements and those kinds of things that are in the best interest of us as a whole, people as a whole, and to make change. Compliance will be important to make change because you got to, oftentimes compliance is the only way to start versus commitment. But I think we'll have fewer and fewer rules, if that makes sense. Less black and white.
Sue, unfortunately, we're near the end of our time for this episode. But before we leave, I wanted to ask you if our listeners wanted more information on yourself, your organization, or perhaps to connect with you, what might be the best way for them to do so or the best place for them to go?
Our website is hpwpgroup.com. And my email is sue@hpwpgroup.com. So whatever, I'm happy to talk to anybody. I've been doing this for almost over 40 years now. And I want people to be able to go to work and feel good when they come home and like they've done something worthwhile. And I think that's a leadership issue. And so I think we start with the leaders and the mindset.
Sue, I wanted to thank you again for taking the time to visit with me, and I hope we can continue this conversation.
Me too. Thanks, Tom.
This month, the Compliance Podcast Network is sponsored by Ethico. Are you struggling with budgeting and finance requests for your compliance program? Well, I've written a white paper together with Nick Gallo at Ethico, and we've made that available. So if you'll click through on the link, you can get a white paper on the ROI of compliance and how you can use that in the budgeting process. I know you will be able to use this white paper on ROI. Are you looking for a quick way to get some ideas for an upgrade for your compliance program? Well, I have a new podcast for you, the Compliance Tip of the Day, where in 5 minutes you can find out a cutting-edge tip of compliance that you can implement or at least consider for your compliance program. Check out the Compliance Tip of the Day each day, Monday through Friday, on the Compliance Podcast Network.